just wanted to be Makar Tov and thank Rabbi Friedman for taking time from his busy schedule to, in between everything, able to Baruch Hashem find a slot where he could come and address some of the shailas that the some of the boys have, and really to have the opportunity to have a, you know, to have a real posek, a real Rav, people call from all over the country, all over the world, and to have the Rav be able to come and share for a few minutes, discuss some of the shailas that the boys had, and really to give us a little bit of a background on a lot of questions that we maybe have, we've heard about, we don't really know the answer to, and to give us a little more clarity in some things. The whole idea of what we gain, you know, from a posek, it's much more than just the concept that halakha is much more than just, you know, black and white. Okay, this is, you just do this, it's mutter, end of discussion. There's always a analysis behind it. Every halacha has a whole wealth of information that goes into it and how we come out with the halacha lamaisa, and really to have the opportunity to have the schus to address some of our shailos and to hear a little bit about these inyanim is really a special opportunity. And we want to thank Rabbi Friedman very much for giving us a few minutes of his time to be able to share some of the shailos. Hopefully at the end, maybe the last two, 3 minutes, if anybody has any questions, preferably don't ask shailos in middle of when Rabbi Friedman can get through the shailos that he's going through. Maybe at the end, the last couple of minutes, maybe the Rabbi Friedman can allow if anybody has any follow-up questions that they want to ask about those shailos, so we'll have a few minutes to do that at the end, okay?
Okay, thank you, Rabbi Shlissel. Shalom Aleichem, everyone. Thank you very much for allowing me this opportunity. So the Rabbanim that are here, Yerveim. So I was given these cards with a lot of shailas, a lot of very, very chashuv shailas, very good shailas. There's definitely enough shailas here. There's only some of them. There's enough shailas here for sure to do two sessions at least. And some of the shailas I recognize were even I received at a previous time. Perhaps I didn't get to them. So what I did was I selected certain shailas to try to address. If I don't address the shaila that any one of you specifically asked, please don't take it personally. I selected them on various cheshbonos. What I think is a good idea, Rosh Lissel, is maybe that I'll try to hold on to the rest of the cards, and maybe if we do this again, rather than taking new shailas, I'll just bring those back. As I said, some of them are re-asked. I probably didn't address them last time. I'll just maybe bring those back and try to address those shailas. In the meantime, I selected certain ones for, as I said, for various reasons. And so let's get to those. First, there were a couple of shailas on Chanukah, so it certainly makes sense to discuss those right now in Yana Deyuma. I'll mention them two together. One shaila was about eating. If a person's not going to be lighting at a time that he normally would, or that he's allowed to, because he's staying in the shiva for a Chanukah, Masiba, or the like, is that okay? Could he eat and light later? And then the second shaila was about a person whose father comes home. He's not home at this man, hadlaka, this man that ideally you would light. So should the son light his menorah at the more ideal time? Or even though his father's not home and not lighting, or should he wait till his father comes home? So let's just discuss the background to this halacha is that the Gemara says that this man fadlakas neiros is by achetichle regel min ashuk, meaning the ideal time to light, and perhaps at one point in history, the only time to light, you know, is when we would light outside, and the hadlaka was for the B'nai Rishus HaRabim. The hadlaka wasn't for the people in the house. The hadlaka was for the Yidden, for the Jews that are walking in the street, specifically those that were coming home from work. So the time was very, very crucial. You had to light at the right time, and if you missed that time, you weren't able to fulfill the mitzvah altogether. Now that at least in Chutz La'aretz, for many, many years, we light indoors, so it's shifted that the primary hadlaka is for the B'nai HaBayis. At the same, the primary meaning, the presume nisa that we're trying to achieve is primarily for the B'nai HaBayis. At the same time, we are still trying to fulfill presume nisa for the people in the street, which is why we light by a window, assuming you live in a home which is not above 20 amas from the ground. So we light in the window so that people in the street could see it as well. But as you said, the primary focus is for the B'nai HaBayis. So therefore, the time according to the vast majority of posts, and the time becomes less of a critical factor. There's still a lechatchila, it's still best to light at the right time. Now, I'm avoiding at this point saying exactly what the right time is. Probably Rebbeim discussed it. Maybe we could discuss that later. He said, but whatever that is, the best time, however many minutes after Shkia that is, it's still best to do that when you can. And if you're at home, you should not delay it, besides the fact that you're not supposed to get involved in other things before doing the mitzvah. But there's an inyan to try to light at the lechatchila time still. But if you can't, you could still make a bracha much later, as long as somebody is going to see your neiros, even if it's only one person, even one person in the house, or it's still within the time that you live in a street where there's going to be some traffic, there's likely to be somebody walking by during the half hour that you light, you could still light with a bracha, even though it may be many hours after the Zman Hadlaka. So let's start with the person whose father's not home at the time. So mitzad the etzem mitzvah would be best to light at the Zman Hadlaka, even though his father's not home. But of course, there's the consideration of, is that derech eretz for his father to light before when his father's not home? So really, I think it really depends on something he should discuss with his father, with his parents, and find out what his father would like. If his father is completely okay with it, that he should light on time, he has no hesitation to allow his son to light at the Zman Hadlak. In fact, he's happy. He wants his son to do the mitzvah in the best way. He unfortunately can't be home at that time. Whether he's at work, whether he's coming in from out of town, a million reasons. But his son is home at light at the time, and he's happy that he lights at the time. Then yeah, that's what he should do. However, if the son senses that really his father or his mother feel that it's really not right, you shouldn't be lighting before your father lights, or whatever cheshbon is in the house, his father doesn't want it, so then he should wait. It's not a question of your father, chas v'shalom, telling you to do an aveira or not to do a mitzvah, where you probably learned the halacha that you're not allowed to listen. Tav avicha chayav mechlodi. That's not the shaila here. If you know that your father would rather you wait till he lights, then you should do that, and then you light later. But if you see that he really, no problem with you lighting on time, then that would be the right thing to do, light at time. Now we know in many places, in many yeshivas or kollelim, they will even interrupt the Seder and have people have the younger light, the Avrichim or the yeshiva bachrim, go and light at the Zman. Some kollelim, where I learned in Chicago, they adjusted the whole Seder. The week of Hanukkah, the whole Seder was adjusted. Instead of having a lunch break or whatever you want to call it for an hour and a half, it was reduced to about a half an hour, and the second Seder would start after a half an hour break. And this way they would end the Seder early, but they wouldn't miss much time from learning, if any. But in some places, even if they can't do that, but they still let out early so you can light up the Zman. Other places, other yeshivas, such as the yeshiva where I come from, and anybody over the age of 25, almost. Most of the people over the average 25 in this room come from. That wasn't the minug. They did not light at the Zman. They did not let the younger light. They held it's better not to interrupt the Seder. And it's an old machlokes. There are gedolim on both sides of this fence, but of this shaila. But so the person at the Chanukah Chagiga, he's at yeshiva, and there are things going on in yeshiva. It's a legitimate reason. It's not so. If it's easy to go home and light and come back, he lives 5 minutes away, he probably should do that. But if it's not practical, it's not practical, and he wants to stay, so he could stay. The question is, though, could he eat? You're not allowed to eat before you do the mitzvah. So for that, he would have to set up a shomer, a very good reminder system. Either a shomer, somebody who's going to remind him, someone at home who's going to sure remind him, or set an alarm. Or I heard from I heard on the shir from a big pesik that he said, could set up the menorah in a way that, like, he walks into his house, he's going to mamish stumble over the menorah. The menorah is going to be right. Maybe it's not your house, so don't put it by the front, or maybe put it by your bedroom door or something in a way that you can't miss it. You know, the menorah is going to be your reminder. Something like that. If you make a significant reminder for yourself that you won't forget to light when you get home, so then you could even be making and eat before this month. But just to end this discussion with the idea that, again, there's a preference to light at this month, and if you could juggle it and light it this month, you should. In other words, just stop for a family to schedule a Hanukkah party where people are coming from their homes and they schedule punk this month hadlaka, or that's not the best thing to do. It's not lechatchila. It happens sometimes you have to go to a chasna and you can't be home at this month, whatever it is, so then you rely on lighting later, you make a shomer, etc. But if you can work it out to light at this month, that certainly would be the preference. Okay. Moving on now. There are a couple of shilas here. Well, one shilah like this, which I think is an important shilah, very important shilah, and it comes up so frequently in different situations. The question was, am I allowed to trust any Jewish person when it comes to kashrus? Can I eat in any frum Jew's home and assume there is no kashrus issues with the food? That is the shilah. This is a very important shilah. And so the answer is there's the technical din, and then there's the application of seichel to the din. And what I mean is as follows. Technically speaking, the halacha is if a person is Shomer Shabbos, and as far as you know, he's Shomer Kashrus. I mean, he's not Chashud. And you know the person. Let's not even talk about Stama Yid who comes in from, you know, that you never met him before and he's inviting to your house. No, somebody you know, someone in the neighborhood, you know he's a Shomer Shabbos. Is he as frum? I see the person with the word frum in quotation marks, so I'll do the same thing. Is he as frum as you are? Maybe yes, maybe not. But he's fine, Shomer Shabbos Yid, and you have no reason to suspect that he's concerned about kashrus, that he's machshav kashrus and he keeps kashrus. So then the din is that you're allowed to trust him. He's not chashed in the area of kashrus, nor is he chashed on any of the averis that would make him a mumah l'chala Torah, which primarily refers to Shabbos from our perspective. Then you could trust him. You could eat the food in his house. Now, in real life, though, you have to know that sometimes it's maybe not always that way, because there might be a person who's, you know, very sincere, but he might, number one, maybe not fully knowledgeable about some shilas. For example, let's just talk about the issue of toloim, or bugs, in fruits and vegetables and various foods. Not everybody is perhaps as learned and knowledgeable about what fruits and vegetables you may have to be concerned about, and they may serve a salad of containing certain vegetables with which they haven't done the proper checking or cleaning, or maybe you can't even do the proper cleaning with this particular vegetable because it's too hard to clean it properly, and therefore we simply are advised not to eat it, at least not in its natural state. Or maybe he is aware of it, but he looks at more as a chumrah. He didn't grow up that way, and by the way, this is the type of thing that changes sometimes, meaning because it depends on somewhat on the pesticides that are used. I mean, I remember growing up and it was in the early 80s, I remember, and it was in 1983 when all of a sudden the whole idea of the vegetables and being infested like hit us like a, you know, like a bolt of lightning. I mean, it was a new thing. In fact, there was one Rav in Lakewood who got very into it, and they even, I don't want to say the nickname they gave him, but they even gave him a nickname based on the fact that he was so into this Indian, and he was mefarsimid. And I heard Rabbi Israel Belsky explain that people say, well, come on, my house, this was never, we always ate this. My mother served, my mother's very much frummer than those rabbis in Lakewood. She never served this. She never had a problem. She always served this. And he said, en chanami, and she did the right thing, and she's not very frum. But things have changed. He said, for the past number of tens of years back then, things were pretty good in America because the pesticides they were using were basically eliminating the problem. It was a very small problem with infestation. But by now, and he's talking then, this is the 80s, by now the bugs have mutated. They've gotten used to those pesticides, which happens. And now the problem is coming back. And Echanami, your mother would always serve that. She had, but what about your bubby or her bubby? They probably never touched this stuff because in their days it was tack infested. It got much better. Well, now it's getting worse. So what I'm saying is these things change with time. It's a long time since the 80s. So probably the person whose house you're eating at has been around since then, and the problem has been there. But they change, and not everybody is fully mekabel the chomer hadavar. He says, like, I take a head of lettuce and I don't see anything in it. Not everybody knows how to look. So therefore, it's that particular area is an area where a person can be very frum and Shomer Shabbos and medaktik and kashrus, and his meat is glatt kosher, etc. But his vegetables might not be, simply because he doesn't have this and he lacks the sensitivity towards it. And that's one area. And there might be a couple of other areas where there's a lack of yidia or a lack of sensitivity to more fine areas in Hilchas Kashrus, which are very important. Eating bugs is very, very chamor, even if people don't. If some people don't give it the same chashivas as they do as eating treifa meat. So therefore, that's why I say you have to use seichel. You have to know, you have to be able to judge, is this person a person that would be on top of those issues? And if he's not, so then perhaps you could eat in his house, but maybe you should avoid some sorts of fresh salads, if you could, especially if you do it in a way that's, you know, an evistic way, not by, you know, not by making it obvious that you wouldn't touch that stuff. And especially if it's a salad that contains vegetables, which if you look on, you look on the kashrus information, which is distributed by any one of a number of kashrus organizations, they all say, avoid this, avoid this, avoid this. And, or you can only eat it if maybe it goes through certain processes of being pureed or whatever, but don't eat it in its fresh, and they're serving it in fresh form. I know my wife in Chicago, she would distribute a lot of food, I should say this publicly, but okay. She would distribute a lot of food and to different people. She would get it from different sources, and sometimes she would get a bag of salad, which contained certain types of vegetables that, as I said, anybody you ask in kashas will tell you, don't eat that in its fresh, and she gets it. Now what she's supposed to do, this is what she's supposed to give to people, and okay, they know it's not coming from her, they know it's not coming from the Friedman's kitchen, that they could say, oh, Friedman's eat this, I can eat it. No, they know it's not, they know it's that she's just distributing it. But even so, she might be distributing to a person who might not think that, who might say, well, if Rebbetzin Friedman sent it to me, I guess it's got to be okay. So we wouldn't send those things out. We would either toss them, or there were some people that would taka. We have a very friends, very frum woman, and she or her husband would taka, you know, things that you could check if you're really caring, you really want through the ticher, and they would do it, and they would trust them implicitly, and they would do it because, you know, they needed, you know, they could use the stuff, and they were willing to do it. So we would always give it to them with telling them that, you know, this is not, as far as we don't know where it came from. We can't assume that the person who sent it went through the heavy work to check it. And we would only send it to this person, or if it wasn't okay, if it's the type of thing that even they couldn't check, then we simply wouldn't send it out. Please, be in Chicago, don't share this information, please. It's just between me and you and everybody else who hears the tape. Okay, so the point I'm saying is, so if you're at the house, if it's a house like that, you might want to think twice about eating there, if you could, again, but you know, you have to be careful, because you can't accept invitations from everybody else and not, you know, so you have to be careful. I mean, obviously, some people you simply can't eat at their house if they don't meet the first standards we said, or if you're concerned that as firm as they are, as they seem to be, but you have real reasons to be concerned, then you probably shouldn't accept an invitation there. But even if you did, it's, you know, something like that, perhaps you should think twice before using it. If, you know, try to avoid things like that. But in general, if they are sincere, firm people, then there's not that much of a chash. Now, but I want to mention one other thing. This is only from people. Sometimes you may be invited, you may have non-firm relatives who are inviting you or your family to a suda, a meal, and they say, well, we're only going to get from this place and this place and whatever it is. That's a whole different shaila, and it's a very sensitive shaila, especially if your parents are going there and you're the one that's not comfortable going there. That's a very difficult shaila, because if they're not from and they're just saying, well, we'll only buy from this store and we'll even show you the wrapper, doesn't always work, because what about the way they warm things up and what about certain things that they never even dawns on them? Yeah, they're showing you the wrappers from the meat. Yeah, they're not buying treif meat, they're buying glatt kosher meat. But what about maybe some of the things that they mix into it, some of the ingredients they put into the stuff which they never imagined could be not kosher about, you know, XYZ. And they're not frum, so they're not shomer Shabbos, so they don't have a cheskas kashrus, you can assume. That's a very difficult shaila, and you have to, you know, you can't just assume that it's okay if you're in that position, especially if you're not the one making the decision, but you're faced with it, and you really have to ask a personal shaila. There is a tshuva from Moshe Feinstein Zatzal who's matir, the case he's talking about is where parents had children that were never not from there. This was during the communist regime in Russia, and their children were influenced by that, and they were very from people, and the question is, could they eat at their kids' home? Now, the case was that their children are telling them, they know what the parents want, they grew up in the parents' home, and they're saying, we're only going to serve you what you want to eat. But they don't have nemonis, and here is a technical thing. They don't have, they're not shomer Shabbos, so they're not shomer kashas. You can't trust them, even if you can't trust them, this person. Even if you know, they're saying they're only going to serve you kosher stuff, but you can't trust them technically, halacha. So Moshe is mechadish that parents can trust the children, and children can trust parents. If a child who's a bal tshuva is invited to his parents' home, and his parents are cooperative, I mean, they're glad that they're happy about the children's situation, or they're not antagonistic, they're not, you know, against what the children are doing, And the children tell them exactly what you can and cannot buy, and they knew, and they have maybe even separate pots. Many people have this. Many Bali Tshuva, the mother has separate pots that she'll only use those pots when they come. And they trust their parents. Their mother would never try to pull a fast one on them. She's not. It's not just a trick. It's not just a ploy to get them to come over. She's really sincere, and she would only serve them. She's not eating kosher because, whatever, she didn't quite make it there yet. But she respects her children's beliefs and practices so that you could trust. Be a child to a parent to a child. Beyond that, it's not at all pashut. And if you're in that situation, then you really have to ask a shiloh, you know, a personal shiloh. Okay, I noticed there's no, oh, there is a clock there, I'm sorry. Okay, till just 2:15 or so? Okay, just another day, Harry, I just have to tell you, you'll forgive me for this machine here. This machine is recording, I mean, is registering seconds, and like, I guess that's hundreds of seconds, because too fast for me, hundreds of seconds. You know what that means? Imagine what the Ribbono Shel Olam is. You know, we think, oh, I spent my. How was your day? Did you spend your day? Yeah, I did. Yeah, I learned for about 20 minutes out of 3 hours. And I, you know, we think I did. You know, not just seconds. The Chavetz Chaim had a cheshbon of seconds at the end of the year. That was the Chavetz Chaim. Or minutes. I think he was mitzvah, but at the end of 1 year, he couldn't account for 3 minutes. 3 minutes in his life of the whole year, 3 minutes in a year, he couldn't account for. And mama, she didn't know what to do. I'm facing Yom Kippur. I don't know what to say to Ribbono Shel Olam. What did I do? I can't remember what I did with those 3 minutes. Okay, we should have those problems on Erev Yom Kippur. But this machine gives me not just minutes, not just seconds, hundreds of seconds. So imagine what Kadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, hundreds of seconds that we have to spend each one properly. So just the Musa Deher to walk away with from this. We have to, you know, take Musa from the technology as well. Okay, next question, very just quick question. Is there any basis for people who keep Chalav Yisrael, but they eat Chalav Stam products made with powdered milk? Is there any basis? Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely basis for it. Is a machlokas poskim? There's a tshuva in the Har Tzvi that is matir, and he holds that the gezeira of Chalav Yisrael, without going into all the background and everything, but the idea, the gezeira of Chalav Yisrael, when we know, we have every reason to believe that, so we have no reason to believe that the milk is coming from a trefer animal. We're certain the milk is coming from kosher animal, but Chazal made a takana, that gezeira that you have to have Yisrael ro'ehu. And so people want, so for that gezeira, the Har Tzvi learns that it did not include milk which you receive in powdered form. And it's not just because they can't make powdered milk from trefa animals. I mean, it's not just that, because then I understand that that's changed nowadays. They could with, you know, of course, again, technology, they could do all sorts of things. It's not just because that hails. It's not part of the gezeira. And I heard from Rosh Hashanah first that Rav Moshe held the same thing. Putting aside Rav Moshe's shita that you could drink the regular milk, but even besides that, he held that chalav powdered milk is not included b'chlal in the gzeira of chalav akum, and therefore it's okay. On the other hand, the Chazon Ish is chalik. It's mefurish in the Sefer Chazon Ish. He did not agree with that. He held that applies even to powdered milk. So there's a machlokas poskim. But is there any basis? There's certainly basis. If someone wants to be machmir, but he says, look, I don't want to rely on Moshe's kula in general to drink regular milk. But when it comes to powdered milk, which is already a machlokas poskim, if the whole gezeira even applies, even before Rav Moshe's chiddush, and they have the Har Tzvi and Rav Moshe to be some mechon for that, so there's definitely a basis for that. And as I said, the machlokas poskim, but there's a basis to be mekel. Okay, now a person asked a shaila here if he wakes up in the morning, a couple of shailas about Hashkamas, you know, Dine Hashkamas Aboker, which I think are kedai to discuss. Person asked a shaila, if a person wakes up in the morning, and he needs to use the restroom, he needs to relieve himself, so he's not in a state where he can make a bracha at that point. So what should he do about bracha on tzitzis? Should he put on his tzitzis and not make a bracha and then make a bracha later? Should he not put them on? Should he put them on and then take them off before he makes the bracha and put them back, and then make a bracha and put them back on? So the basis of the shaila, of course, is that kala mitzvahs mevarach aleihen over lasiyasan. In general, you have to make a bracha before you do a mitzvah. So before you do the mitzvah means normally, let's say you were in a state where your hands were clean and your body was ready, you're ready to make a bracha and you're about to put on tzitzis, so yes, you would make the bracha first and then put on the talis katan. And that's what anyone who puts on a talis gadol does as well. He doesn't do it while it's still in the bag or while it's still folded up. It has to be right before you do the mitzvah, but before. So you take the talis gadol, you hold it, you make the bracha, and then you wrap yourself. So same thing with talis katan. If you could, you would make the bracha first, then put it on. But here he can't make a bracha right now. His hands aren't clean and his body's not clean. So it's still best to put the talis katan on. It is best. It's best to wear it whenever you can, assuming that he wakes up after the zman. Sometime, a good part of the year, especially, was that way before they changed the clock, and it's probably going to get that way again you know, before the summertime. There's a time of the year when you wake up, that many people wake up when it's before the Zman anyway. It's Lila. So there it's less of a concern to put it on right away. It's before Mishayak here, before the time that you can recognize between white and blue, which is, even if you go with an earlier Zman, it's certainly not more than an hour before sunrise. Certainly not more than that. And some people, if sunrise is 7:15, 7:30, there are definitely people that wake up an hour before that. Okay, but let's say you're waking up, especially now, you're waking up and it's already within the time that you're chayiv in the mitzvah tzitzis, and you could make the bracha, but you physically can't. So it's still kedai to put it on, especially if you're walking. You're walking to the Beis HaKisei. It's best not to walk Dalet Amos without tzitzis during the day. It's best not to, even if you're not walking, but especially if you're walking. So you should put them on. And then when you come out of the bathroom and you wash your hands, etc., and you're all ready to make brachas, you don't have to take them off. You simply hold the four tzitzis in your hand when you're ready to make that bracha. You say Asher Yatzah first, but whatever. When you may trick that bracha, you hold the four tzitzis in your hand and you make the bracha on it then. This is what you do, Kol Zman, you're single and Ashkenazic descent, and so that you're not putting on a talis gadol. You're not doing that. Mamela, you have to make a bracha on talis gadol. A person who wears a talis gadol, so then it's all hal shayla. Many say not to make a bracha on the talis gadol. It's a machlokas poskim, but many, and it's very common that people who wear a talis gadol don't make a bracha on the talis gadol altogether. They even though there's going to be a gap of time from the time they put it on till they make the bracha, till they put it on talis gadol, afal pikein, they wait to put it on talis gadol, and then they make the bracha on that, and that covers the talis gadol as well. But for a person who's not putting on a talis gadol, as long as you're single, and as I said, not from a Sephardi who puts on a talis gadol, then you would, like I said, put it on right away, and you make the bracha later, hold the tzitzis in your hand, and make the bracha, and then kiss the tzitzis. Now, in general, there's another shaila. It gets a little bit detailed, a little complicated, but I think it's just good idea to speak it out. And the shaila was asked, what's Bechlal the Seder about making brachas in the morning? The bracha al Netilas Shadayim and the other brachas. How do you arrange that? When do you make the brachas? So just to point out briefly, did we discuss this last time I was here? Anybody know? No? Okay. Not that I expect you to remember, but in case you did. Anyway. The bracha of Al Netilas Shadayim, there's a machlokas post what's going on. First, so let me just explain. When you wake up in the morning, you have to wash your hands three times, right? Three times, which we call a Nagel Vasser, to take off Ruach Ra. That you have to do, but that is not, there's no bracha on that. That is not why you're making a bracha on Tefillah Shadayim. It's not because of taking off the Ruach Ra. There is no bracha on that. That's something you have to do, Medina de Gemara. By the way, when do you do that? Well, if when you wake up, if you don't have a strong urge to go to the restroom, if you're able to wash your hands first, then you wash your hands first. But if you need to use restroom right away, then you're not supposed to delay. You just go to the restroom and you come out and then you wash Nagel Vasser. But Nagel Vasser is not why you're making the bracha on Tefillah Shadayim. You're making the bracha on Tefillah Shadayim either according to the shita of the Rush, because it's a hachana for tefillah. When you prepare yourself for davening, you're supposed to wash it. One of the ways of preparing yourself is washing your hands, and you make a bracha on that mitzvah of preparing your hands for davening. But according to that, if you're going to wash your hands right after you come out of the bathroom and make a bracha on Tefillah Shadayim, and then you're getting dressed and you're touching covered parts of your body, and you're tying and you're putting on your shoes, and maybe even you're using the bathroom again before you daven, especially if you learn in between, and you may be maybe an hour or more until you daven, and so, you know, especially a person has a seder before davening, may end up using the bathroom again. Not normally, probably wouldn't, but it's a possibility, and certainly getting his hands dirty. So then this is not hachana for tefillah. When he washes his hands now, they're not ready for tefillah because he's going to get them dirty. He's going to have to wash them again before davening. So it wouldn't be appropriate to make the bracha then. But according to the Rashba, the washing in the morning, the bracha that the washing goes on, is not hachana for tefillah. It's just the idea that you're a beriyah chadasha, Kadosh Baruch Hu has given back your neshama, refreshed you, you're up and ready to do avodas Hashem again, like a kohen washes his hands before he does the avodah in the mikdash. So you're washing your hands before you start avodas Hashem. So then, even if you're getting your hands davening before dirty, it doesn't make a difference. The bracha is going on that washing that you did when you first woke up, which could be the Nagel Vasser. It's the same, you don't have to wash separate, the same Nagel Vasser that you did three times, that's your Yotze, the Rashba's washing. The point I'm saying is, the bracha is not because of removing the Ruach Ra, the bracha is because you're that new berry, that you've got refreshed kochos, you're ready to serve Hashem again, there's a bracha on that mitzvah of washing. So that you should do, according to the Rashba, you should do it right away. But according to the Rash, You shouldn't be making the bracha right away. You should wait until you wash your hands right before davening. So which should you do? According to the Rosh, but it's really not right to wait. But according to the Rosh, you have to wait. And we want to be yotzi both. Whenever we make a bracha, we try to be yotzi both shitas. We try not to make a bracha, you know, which is only like good like one mandamer. So what the Mishnah Berurah recommends, different poskim approaches differently in the Achrona, but the Mishnah Berurah recommends, based on the Chayodin, that when you wash your hands in the morning after using the bathroom before you got dressed and before you're ready to daven, don't make a bracha then. Don't make the bracha then. Wash negel vaser, and you say Asher Yotza then, and it's best to say Elokai Neshama then as well, because Elokai Neshama best should be juxtaposed to Asher Yotza, meaning it should be right after Asher Yotza, since Elokai Neshama doesn't start with Baruch Atah Hashem. It's what's called a bracha. It's best that it be a bracha Zmuch L'Chavrta. It's best that you say them back to back. And it's best then that you say Birchas HaTorah. That's the best thing to do. That's what I do in the morning based on the Mishnah Berurah. That's, I think, the best thing to do. After you wash your hands again, after you're relieving yourself, say Asher Yatzar, Elokai Neshama, and Birchas HaTorah, with, of course, Yivarechacha, the Psukim. And then you can go get dressed and don't worry about getting hands dirty, etc., etc. When you're ready to daven, before you daven, you have to wash your hands again at that point. And when you have to wash your hands again, then you'll say Alatil Shadayim on that washing, which is leading you straight into davening. So according to the Rosh, that's l'chatchila. But you say, well, but according to the Rashba, I'm an hour late. I should have made the bracha on the washing an hour ago. I can't, washing again is not going to help. The bracha goes on that washing, not on this washing. So for that, the Mishnah Berurah says, I'll pin the Beis Yosef, that as long as you then combine it or connect it to the rest of the brachas, the whole list of brachas HaShachar, which you say there's 16 brachas, you say, if you say them all, then it's okay, or, you know, most of them. Because really, those brachas also, technically speaking, when you learn the Gemara brachas, you really should say those brachas as soon as you wake up. You open your eyes, you say, Pokei Achivrim. You sit up, you say, Matir Asurim. You stand up, you say, Zokiv Kufim, etc., etc. But we don't do that. We misadu them, we wait till we get to shul, we say, Pokei Achivrim, even though our eyes are open for an hour, Zokiv Kufim, even, you know, etc. We don't say them right away, even though that's the best time. We're Masada them together. So says the Beis Yosef, you can be Masada on Latil Shadayim also, according to the Rashba. According to the Rashba, that on Latil Shadayim is not a bracha on a mitzvah. It's a bracha on a, you know, it's similar to the Berachas HaShachar. It's a bracha on a status, on being a new barrier, just like having my eyes open. So you could put it together with those brachas, and even though it's going on the washing you did an hour ago, it's okay. It's not a bracha on the mitzvah of washing. It's a bracha on the status, which the washing represents. So maybe you can do it later. So that's really the best, according to Mishnah Berurah, that's what to do. When you're ready to wash your hands now to daven, then you say Ante Shadayim, and then say the other bracha. You could put tallis and tefillin in between also, but the point is it's all one set of brachas. Ante Shadayim, tallis, tefillin, and then Berachas HaShachar. And that way you're yotzei all the shitas. The only question is, well, let's, so what I said was that, you know, you after you washed your hands the first time in the morning, you got them dirty again because you got dressed. And instead, what happens if you didn't mamish get them dirty? Maybe you got dressed in a way you didn't touch covered parts of your body. And I don't know, maybe your shoes are not leather shoes or something, or shoes that, without getting into the whole shayah, shoes that you don't have to make a bracha. Maybe you just slip your feet into them, perhaps, if they're made to do that, this and that. So maybe you didn't get your hands dirty. So now you're going to make the bracha before on the washing before davening. But even according to the Rosh, it's really going on the original washing. And according to the Rosh, we don't have this Eitzah of Beis Yosef. That only works like the Rashba, but it's not a Berachas HaMitzvah. So you should make sure to touch, make sure to get your hands dirty. So make sure that if you didn't, that you should. What does that mean? How dirty? So did hear different days, but I don't know if I'm allowed to rely on something I heard 45 years ago. I asked Avram Kanarik, the Chatzadik Levracha, who Shivan Ertzel, who was recently nifter, he told me, and that's which I understood Pasha, that it's sufficient if you touch a covered part of the body or some the things that require Nadila, you touch a covered part of the body, things or your shoes, that's sufficient. I know I've heard other posts say differently. They say it has to be Mamash Amokah Matunaf. So there are two sheetahs out there, but certainly like the first way, it's not difficult. You make sure to touch, you know, while you're getting dressed, you touch a part of the body that's normally covered, you touch your shoes, and most people are going to do that anyway, so you solve that problem. Okay. There's a question here. It's a... a question. If a person has a Band-Aid, not wearing, but has a Band-Aid on their hand, and they have to wash either for the, in the morning, if they wash for bread. So what do you do? So if you have a Band-Aid on your hand, as long as they're, so for a negelvas and these things, you don't have to be too concerned about it. But even for washing for bread, as long as it still belongs there, I mean, you have some sort of cut or wound underneath it, and it's there for a reason. It's not there for, decoration. So then you're allowed to wash right over it, as long as no problem getting it wet. We're not talking about a major, chas v'shalom, a major wound that you can't get it wet. You have a Band-Aid over some cut. So as long as you get it wet, just wash right over it. Because the only concern would be maybe you'll take it off during the meal and then there's a part of your hand that wasn't washed. But as long as it's a cut, but not chashish, you're going to take it off because you still need the Band-Aid. If it's taka half off anyway and you don't really need it and you're just too lazy, then you should take it off before. If you don't really need it anymore and you really might, you might pick on it while you're in the meal, you might pull it off, then you should do it beforehand. Take it off beforehand, wash off the glue, whatever, make sure there's no chatzitza. If you have a real chatzitza on your hand, then you have to do your best to get it off before you wash until Shadayim. I guess that means I guess that's the bell. Okay, well, I'll end with one more question. 2:15 was the time, right? So I have just one more question here. What should Yeshiva Bacha do? It's in Yeshiva. What should he say for Harachamon for the Balabais? So I really think that Yeshiva Bacha should still give a bracha to his parents. That they don't have to be sitting there. You don't have to say maybe Avimori Balabais. You mean say Balasabais. You leave out the word Balabais. But your parents are, in most cases, they're supporting you and paying your tuition in most cases, or supportive, hopefully. And if they're not, so. Adarabba, so it's okay. You can give him a bracha anyway, and call him a subinkan. Call him a subinkan for all the people here sitting. That the bracha for everyone here. That's now obviously the harachman and benching. And we're not talking about yotze or not yotze. If you say it wrong, if you didn't say, well, that's not an issue. It's an issue. What's the proper thing to do? The proper thing is to have a hergish of hakaras hatov to your parents, who probably supporting you, probably encouraging you, and even if they're not. You're only here because of them, and everybody owes them hakaras hatov. So it's a good thing to mention them and to mention the people around you as well. Okay.